Shadowcast, Flash episode number 4. This week, we again bring you two stories. Our first is Through Walls by R.J. Astrick. R.J. Astrick is a writer based in Wellington, New Zealand. Her fiction has appeared in Abyss and Apex, Strange Horizons, Aurealis, Andromeda Spaceways, and many, many more. You can find her online at rachelastrick.com or read and support her online pirate serial at the link provided. Her latest novel, A Festival of Skeletons, will be serialized by Crossed Genres. And now, Through Walls by R.J. Astrick. Read by Amy Tapia.
Through Walls by R.J. Astrick. For 3 days, the implants burn inside my head like coals. But on the fourth day, the burning goes away and I can feel my new eyes sort of settling inside my skull, as if they finally accepted their home. When I tell my Sanako this, he holds my hands very tight and kisses the bandages around my head and says, "I can't wait until you can see me, Lele." His voice is thick with emotion and I know he's crying, even before I feel the tears on my palm. It's funny, I've never been able to see, but every time I touch my Sanako's face, I imagine I'm seeing it, the fur of his chin and the dimple in his left cheek and the wrinkles in his forehead. "I can't wait either," I tell him, my mouth very close to his ear. "Tomorrow the bandages come off." That night, I go to sleep happy. I often think I'm a burden to my Sanako, but I know that with my new eyes I won't be. In fact, I will be better than human. My implants are RDR-34s. Top-of-the-line bionics that my Sanako imported from America. The little radar lenses are covered by smooth plastic shells that look, Sanako tells me, just like real eyes. When they heal, I won't be able to see in color, but I will be able to see depths, 100 million diverse and unique shades of depths, which should, the doctors tell me, make up for it. The implants are also very powerful. A slight adjustment and I'll be able to focus on objects miles away and see through walls like Superman. My Sanako always says only the best for my wife. That night I dream in darkness, but it is the last time I will dream like this, in voices and smells and doubts. My doubts, deep, dark doubts my Sanako said I should never entertain, and so I welcome them. Tell me about my Sanako's adultery, his infidelity, his shame and his dumb, blind burden of a wife. I shout this to my demons, proudly, loudly, because tomorrow I will see and they cannot take anything more from me. When I wake up the next morning, my Sanako is not at my side. I am not worried. I hear his voice downstairs, deep and sweet, talking to someone else. Perhaps my sister, who often visits our house in the early mornings, or one of his work colleagues. I expect he has snuck away early to prepare some wonderful surprise for me, a first feast for my new eyes. I know I am supposed to wait for him. He has to make the adjustments so that my eyes focus correctly, but I can't wait. I leap from the bed and tear the bandages from my face, and then I see. What a world I live in! A world of lines and shapes and texture, and all of it different and unusual and curious. The bed dark and straight and the carpet like frost. When I go to the window, the thin curtains are transparent and I can see through them into the courtyard where trees grow and stones sit and walls stand. And there's a whole world, a whole maze of lines and light that would make me weep with joy if plastic eyes could ever cry. For a time I hold myself there, shaking. It is so big. The world is so big. I can't get over it. I am so happy, so ecstatic. And then I remember that this is a happiness I should be sharing with my Sanako, my wonderful Sanako who worked so hard to make this possible. It is my turn to surprise him, I think. I tiptoe down the stairs with my nightgown wrapped about me. He is in the kitchen. He is laughing, and I might hear my sister laughing too. As quiet as a mouse, I push open the door and step in. They are naked. My husband and my sister. They are naked in my kitchen, shamelessly, their backs to me. They are naked in my kitchen. They are having an affair in my kitchen. My husband and my sister doing it while poor, stupid, blind Lay, who is such a burden, sits stupidly in her bed with her head turbaned in bandages, none the wiser. And now these two libertines, adulterers, liars, are laughing at me. All the demon doubts in me come screaming into my head, and I pick up a knife from the sideboard. I grab my sinago by the skin of his back, which comes surly away from his bones like paper or cotton, and force him onto the ground. I put the knife up to his teeth, and I make him swallow it. After that, I don't think of much at all. My head is strangely blank, and somewhere, my sister is screaming. Why, Lay, why, weeps my sister. What did he do? What is wrong with you? I want to make her eat the knife, too, except I can't bear to move again. What sort of cruelty is this? Why would a man give his wife sight only to parade his mistress before her? What kind of man? I dig my fingers into Sinako's chest. I want to tear out his wicked heart and drain its poison away. But as I scratch his chest, his skin feels wrong. His skin comes away in my hand. His skin feels like cotton. And I remember then the transparent curtains and what the doctor said about the setting and adjustment and how I could maybe see through walls. What have you done, Lay? My sister cries. And finally, I see.
Our second story, The Nature of Evil, is by John Rosenman. John is an English professor at Norfolk State University, where he designed and teaches a course in how to write science fiction and fantasy. He is a former chairman of the board of the Horror Writers Association and has published over 300 stories in places such as Weird Tales, Whitley Strieber's Aliens, Fangoria, Galaxy, Starshore, The Age of Wonders, and Hot Blood. John has published 11 books, including science fiction, action and adventure novels, and stories such as Beyond Those Distant Stars and The Voice of Many Waters. Visit him at his website, www.johnrosenman.com. And now, The Nature of Evil, by John B. Rosenman. The Nature of Evil, by John B. Rosenman.
I recognize you, you know.
Olson looked up from his newspaper and saw a man about his age sitting across from him at the table.
Excuse me? The man gave him a knowing smile. I said, I recognize you.
Olson set down the paper. The holiday season had been busy, and he had worked late at the accountant's office before stopping for a hamburger on the way home. The last thing he needed was some stranger who claimed to know him.
I'm sorry, he said, but I don't know you.
A shrug.
I don't know you either.
Then what?
I said I recognize you. Not that I know you. To be precise, I've never met you before.
Uh-oh, some nut. But Olson was shy with people and didn't say that. He looked down at his hamburger, which he'd barely touched. Maybe he should take it and go. The man's smile widened, revealing sharp incisors.
Aren't you going to ask me how I recognize you?
A Christmas carol, Deck the Halls, played faintly in the background. Okay, Olson asked. How did you? The man pointed at Olson's tie.
It was your tie. It's the exact same shade of green that he was wearing that day.
That who was wearing? Olson would have asked. But he had made it a point to avoid uncomfortable, embarrassing situations. In fact, he had developed a sixth sense for them, so he didn't ask. But the man continued anyway.
I knew my wife was seeing someone, he said. I even hired a detective to snoop on her, but he found nothing.
Then one day I happened to see a man meet Kate in a brookside park. He stared at Olson's tie.
Your tie is the exact same hue.
This was crazy, Olson thought. Who recognized someone by the color of his tie? More seriously, though, this man was accusing him of having an affair with his wife, which was outright madness. The idea of him doing something so wrong and dangerous was unthinkable. Olson glanced about the neat, clean fast food restaurant he sat in, seeing people eating sandwiches and enjoying the Christmas season. It all looked so safe and normal. And yet this complete stranger had invaded his life here and accused him of adultery with his wife. Olsen gulped his Coke and put his hamburger back in its wrapper. "Nice talking to you," he said, starting to rise. The stranger reached across the table, seized his arm, and pulled him back down. "Sit," he said. "Stay and chew the fat with me." Olsen acquiesced. After all, he didn't want to create a scene. He'd just sit here a little while longer and see what this man wanted. Maybe make him understand that it was a case of mistaken identity. In the event matters did get, well, awkward, he'd just leave. The man leaned toward him.
"Actually, to be precise, it wasn't just the tie that helped me recognize you. It was also the way you eat your cow meat."
"The way I eat?"
"Yes, dainty little nibbles."
The man raised his hand and mimed Olsen eating his hamburger.
"Are you always that neat and mousy?"
He shook his head.
"Surely not in bed. Kate likes big bites in the sack. You couldn't have kept her happy with those neat little mousy nibbles."
Stunned, Olsen watched his visitor pull napkins out of the holder, making an untidy mess on the table. Olsen, who liked to keep things neat, found this act deliberately goading. But even worse, the man had accused him of sinful acts that were quite beyond his nature. Despite Olsen's shock, one word came through clearly. "Liked? Did you say she liked it?" The man grinned, revealing his sharp incisors again.
"Ho, ho, ho! Indeed I did. Strictly past tense."
He leaned forward again.
"I had to kill her, you know."
"Kill her?" He couldn't continue.
"Of course. Just as I'm going to kill you."
Olsen tried to rise, but couldn't. The man's eyes bored into him, sapping his will.
Look, mister, Olsen said. This has gone far enough. I don't know who you are, and I never met your wife. This is a mistake. For your information, I've been married 17 years to the same woman, and I've never looked at anyone else.
"Sure," the man said. "That's what the first two said."
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, feel free to tell a friend, blog about it, or just throw open the window and scream into the night. If any or all of those options seem like a bit too much work, we do operate solely on donations, and a link is provided on the website. Every cent goes to maintaining the site and the servers, as well as preparing us to become a paying market. Our intro music today was The Cove, provided by The Contrarian. You can find out more at thecontrarianmedia.com. Our background music was courtesy of Christopher Carlson. You can find more of his selections at christophercarlson.bandcamp.com. Today's episode was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year, and of course, stay well.